Hey, it's Joe. Today's topic is about not acting your age. Look, you already know it's true. It's definitely a self-fulfilling prophecy that if we let ourselves believe that we can't do it anymore, or we need to back off the training load and intensity to avoid getting hurt, or to account for our declining physical capability, or to adjust for slower recovery speed, if we just let ourselves believe it, it becomes true. The mere act of backing off leads to diminished capacity. Of course it does. Well, the good news is that Matt Fitzgerald, prolific author, coach, and lifelong endurance athlete, rejoins me on the Wise Athletes podcast to talk about his approach to pushing the boundaries of the older athlete to keep those boundaries from shrinking in. Matt does not believe in training older athletes differently than any other athlete who seeks to get stronger and faster. Restrictions due to age are largely in your head. This is a good one. All right, let's talk to Matt Fitzgerald. Matt Fitzgerald, welcome back to the Wise Athletes podcast.
It's great to be back, Joe.
Yeah, man. You've been a guest a few times. You've been a good friend. Thank you. You are a lifelong runner, a coach, and more importantly, you're a deep thinker and writer about topics I am interested in. Whenever we get together, I always run out of time before I run out of questions. But tell our audience, remind them, for the ones who have been with us for a while, who are you? What do you do? Mention some of the books that you've written.
Yes, as you mentioned already, lifelong runner, done a bunch of triathlons as well, and got into writing about endurance sports pretty much right after college. And yeah, I've written a ton of books, mostly for endurance athletes, including 80-20 Running, How Bad You Want It, Racing Weight, many more. And now I'm based in Flagstaff, Arizona, where I operate a business called Dream Run Camp, which is like a year-round fantasy retreat for adult runners. Yeah.
Awesome. Well, so the books you mentioned and others, I think, touch on a topic that I'd like to spend our time on today. You wrote an article that I saw and I reached out to you immediately. Mm-hmm. It was called Stronger, Faster, Older, which is a clever name because, of course, it's sort of a non sequitur. Yep. That doesn't make any sense. That's silly. But it isn't silly. It actually, you think, I agree with you, but let's talk about why you think it's a mistake for older athletes to intentionally limit themselves just simply because they're older.
Yeah, I mean, I see that a lot. And I mean, it's a phenomenon, a psychological phenomenon of like creating artificial barriers. And even at Dream Run Camp, we try to take those down. There are runners who feel like, oh, I'm too slow to deserve to train like a pro. It's like, that's artificial. That's like, you're making that.
Yeah, you just made that up.
Yeah. And with older athletes, it is, you hear it all the time in athletes' language. It's like, oh, well, you know, I'm 50 now, so I don't recover as quickly. Or like, I'm 50 now, so I can't do the big workouts I used to do. And like, I'm not saying that that's completely untrue in 100% of cases, but it's very often an assumption without a real foundation. It's more of like an expectation, like, oh, I'm going to slow down at this age. It's like, you don't know that. And so for me as a coach, I want to just obliterate all of those assumptions. Reality always gets the final word. So reality will teach you, don't help it along. You know, just pretend you'll never slow down. And then reality will tell you when it's time.
Yeah. I'm not sure when it started, but we're near the beginning of the generation that is blazing the trail for older athletes.
Yep.
You know, my parents, they always did sports, tennis, and golf, and things like that. You know, that's what respectable people did. You know, but they didn't lift weights or do endurance sports or things like that. You know, I can still remember when it was a joke. You know, the comedian would come up on stage and say, yeah, some guy was running down the street, and I drove up to him and I said, hey, are you okay? You know, who's chasing you? You know, that was the joke, right?
Where's the fire?
Exactly. And so we're different now, but we have these assumptions, I think, in our mind from how we grew up, and old people didn't do stuff like that. And and it is true that, you know, yeah, you know, maybe you don't sleep as well as you did, and maybe that means you don't recover as well as you did, and maybe you do have some more aches and pains than you used to. But hell, even when I was in my 30s, when I had a sore joint, the worst thing I could do would be to rest it. Mm-hmm. You know, they don't heal by resting. They heal by using within a little bit lower tolerance, and then you work back to where you were. But, you know, I'm going to steal a line from a movie and just say, this is the central point here, but I want to know how you do this. How do you convince these people, and how do you help them train beyond where these artificial boundaries that they think they have? But the line is this, you're old enough to remember this, the movie Braveheart. And he says, every man dies, but not every man truly lives. And, you know, it's this life of adventure, this life of putting yourself out there. Sure, you're going to fail sometimes. But, you know, if you don't try and fail, then in the end, what did you do with the time that you were blessed with?
Yes. Yep. Yeah, I agree 100%. And yeah, to your point about how things are changing, you know, this won't surprise you to hear, but like I am working on a book, that is, targeted toward older endurance athletes.
Great.
And the way, I mean, some of these books exist already, but the hook for me is not like, oh, you know, here's my longevity pitch for older runners. There's a revolution happening in performance in the older age groups across a variety of endurance disciplines. And, you know, what was considered impossible is becoming possible. And what you're starting to see is, you know, like after Title IX and a lot more women were doing these sports, you saw the performance gap like shrink and shrink and shrink. And I think you're going to see the same thing. Well, we're already seeing the same thing happen in terms of like, you know, records are still being broken by 25 and 30 year olds, but like we're catching up. And it's really exciting. And it's not just in one endurance sports in sport. And it's not just because of technology or whatever. And so, the thesis of the book is like, this is a phenomenon. It's happening, at least at the bleeding edge of performance. And it's like, if you're an athlete, if you're an aging athlete as well, wouldn't you like to know what their secrets are? And so the book will delve into that, like the who, the why, and the how of this kind of performance revolution.
Well, that's really great. You know, if it sounds like interesting reading in any case, and a tip here and there is always a helpful thing, but to just know that, just have hope that it could be, maybe I could do more. Maybe I, just because I hurt a little bit more than I want to, that maybe that doesn't mean I have to stop or slow down or take up pickleball. Mm-hmm. You know, instead of doing triathlons or, you know, mountaineering or, you know, to mention one of my favorite things that I did quit because I was afraid of dying. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, I think that there's some truth to it. So I'm saying this to get you into your coaching mode here. There's something, you know, you use it or you lose it. That applies to everything, your brain, your muscles, your cardiovascular system, everything, it applies. The older you get, the faster you lose it. Mm-hmm. So that means a couple of different things. One is that don't get hurt, mm-hmm. because if you really get hurt, then you're going to lose a lot because it's going to disappear really fast. So be patient. Maybe that's the main thing for the older athlete is to be more patient, because a bad mistake will cost you more. But you really have got to provide the signal to your body to, hey, we got to be more like we were 10 and 15 years ago, mm-hmm. than you thought we needed to be.
Yep.
And so you have to be pushing that envelope pretty regularly, or the envelope shrinks in on you. That's what I think. What do you think?
Yeah. I'm in the early days of my research for this project, but that's what I'm finding. Like if you look at, like I interviewed this Irishman named Tommy Hughes the other day, who has a couple of world records, a few world records for the marathon in older age groups. He ran a 2:27 marathon at 59.
Wow.
Yeah. Ran a 2:30 marathon at 64, wow. I believe, like both world records. And I talked to him, and you know, he's old school. Like he's not doing like a lot of like fancy longevity biohacks, but he's like, you know, I make a distinction between like big rocks and little rocks. Mm-hmm. And most of these people are like, some of them for sure are taking advantage of little rocks, like you know, supplements and, you know, cryotherapy and stuff like this. But the big rocks are things like, you know, still training hard. Like this guy, I talked to him, like he's 65 now. And I said, you know, what's your training like now? He's like, well, I ran 130 miles last week. Like, wow. It's like, you know, like no one would advise him to do that. You know, if you just listen to the chatter around him, it's like, oh, you're too old. You have to dial it back. He's like, I'll decide. And he said, like, you know what, that might've been a little bit too much, but he fully believes that like he can average 100 miles per week still. And he still loves it. And like his training is a little bit like kind of not textbook, but he is excited to get out the door and run every day. And that's huge. That is a big rock. Like that's what you always see with these, you know, record breakers in the older age groups. It's like the passion and the hunger are there. And like, it's a relationship. You have a relationship with your sport. And if you still want to be performing at a high level when you're 50, 60, whatever, like you've got to be in love and hungry. You know, he said, you know, for him, the thing that just unlocked the tear he's on now is he did have a little bit of a fallow period. Like he never really gave up running, but there were times when he wasn't competing. And then he kind of came out of one of those periods and ran a marathon. And someone told him, like, do you know you just broke a world record? He's like, what do you mean? Like the world record is like 201. He's like, no, for your age group. And he's like, that's a thing. And like, once he realized that like he could chase like records again, he was just lit up. And so, yeah, you have to move the goalpost a little bit, but like, you know, the big rocks are just, you know, still training hard and consistently, giving yourself a certain amount of license to do it your way and find your formula, you know, keeping the joy in it and still setting and chasing big goals that seem very important to you.
Yeah. You know, and maybe the goal isn't to break a world record for your age group because, you know, there usually is one best in
the world. Yeah, there's
one. And so, you know, maybe that's too, at least immediately, too far of a reach. But people can have goals. You know, they want to train for some adventure or they're going to do some, you know, long swim in the Bahamas or, you know, whatever. And they just have this. It gives them kind of a motivation for some powerful memory. They're going to go grab some, you know, it's in a year from now or whatever. And in between now and then, they now have to train to get their body from where it is today to where it needs to be in order to swim 10 miles around some island. So anyway, just to use that as an example, how, as a coach, how would you, you know, I think you say that you don't really have like older person training plans.
Yep.
But I'm imagining that there are some tweaks that you're expecting to make when it is an older athlete to your normal training plans to push the athlete to their potential without costing them a year's recovery with an injury.
Yes. I make that point in the article you referenced that like, all athletes deal with, well, they have constraints and limitations. And, you know, age-related ones are just like one category. But even the 20-year-olds, you know, when I was a young athlete, I was prone to tendon injuries. Had nothing to do with age because I was in my 20s. But like, that was a limiter for me. And for me, like I tended to become a little bit overcooked if I leaned too much into like VO2 max type of intervals, just learned this through trial and error. So that was an individual limitation, again, not age related, but because I was young. So, you know, as you do age, your body changes and your limiters change. But you've always had them. So that's what I mean when I say I don't treat older athletes any different. I just assume everyone has limiters. They're unique to the individual and they also change over time. And you have to treat the training process as kind of like an open-ended experiment just to learn what those limiters are and then, you know, work toward them, around them, in various ways. So, you know, for an older athlete, you know, an example of the type of change, like I'm prepared to make is like going from like a 7-day microcycle to a 9 or 10 day microcycle, where instead of like trying to pack 3 quality sessions into 7 days, it's 3 sessions, 3 quality sessions in 9 or 10 days, just, you know, providing a little bit more space around those types of workouts.
And by quality, you mean like more intensive?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. I got you. One of the things that I'm interested in is more of these, you know, little tidbits, things that you've encountered over and over again. So, you know, it's secondhand to you, but it would be useful to each of us, one-off older athlete who's listening, you know, what are the, so one of the things that you mentioned is, you know, trying to put a little more space between the, the really intensive exercises. But what other things, you know, with the idea being that if you take time off, you're backpedaling, you're losing it as you go. Yep. So, you know, there must be some like, there's no days of sitting on the couch, you know, kind of a thing. Anyway, what would you say?
Yep. Yeah, it is. It's true. I mean, you want to keep moving, but movement can take, you know, so many different forms. So, you know, another one would be, you know, something that I'm doing now, you know, as a 54-year-old runner is, I'm just doing, you know, slightly scaled back versions of a lot of the bread and butter workouts I've done for a very long time. So, you know, whereas it might've been, you know, 12 times 400 meters a couple decades ago, now it's 8 or 9 times 400 meters. And so, you know, like you're getting almost all the benefit with just, but you're just like tamping back the risk a little bit and being a little kinder to your body. And by, you know, making those changes, it keeps you in the game. You know, you're less likely to, by, you know, proactively making those small adjustments, you're less likely to have to make big adjustments like missing a bunch of time to recover from an injury because you just had to do 12 intervals.
Yeah. Yeah. And maybe on that note, one of the things that I encounter a lot, I imagine that this is very common. Maybe it's even common to you, especially, you know, Mr. Tendon Problem in your 20s, is that you feel something, a twinge, a tweak, a niggle.
Yep.
And that might be, you know, the end of your career, or it might be nothing, you know? And if you stopped every time you felt a little something, well, you'd be on the couch. Yep. So how do you tell? How do you, and what do you do to, you know, especially with the older athlete where you tear that Achilles, you know, you're done at least for a while.
Yes. Yep. So there's this guy who lives here in Flagstaff. We go to his gym every week. His name is Ryan Whitehead. I co-authored a book called Pain and Performance with him.
Oh,
and
sure.
He has a method that he calls training as treatment. And the idea is that, you know, the actual, well, it was, you made this point a moment ago, motion is lotion. It's like, you know, when you get that niggle, you tend to think, well, what caused it was riding my bike or running. But guess what can also cure it? Like riding your bike or running. And so, like my term for like this practice is I call it incremental retreat. So, the mistake I would make in the past, it was like, I would get a niggle and I would automatically assume it was nothing. And I would just barge ahead and make no adjustments. And then like a niggle became something that kept me out of racing for 18 months. So, you know, what you want to do is, you don't want to like be fearful, or catastrophize when you have these niggles, cause you're going to have them, but you do want to like react quickly. So just like making small adjustments quickly, can spare you having to make big adjustments later. And yeah, it's just, there's a little bit of an art to it as well. I mean, you look at like, what's the intensity of it? You know, where, when, and how does it manifest? And like, what is an adjustment that I could, like, what's the minimal adjustment I could make to my training to kind of work around it? And, you know, it, you know, for endurance athletes, we're talking about your primary discipline. So, you know, in running it, you know, just because you have a niggle doesn't mean you can't run. It might mean you need softer surfaces for a minute, or you might need to just avoid really fast stuff for a minute. Or you might just need to avoid hills for a minute, or maybe a combination of those things, like incremental retreat. You keep moving, but you do listen to your body and you make a quick, sensible response. And then there's also stuff you can do in the gym. Like hopefully you're in the gym a couple times per week, you know, getting after it with strength training. And, you know, there's also adjustments you can make in the gym. And the aforementioned Ryan Whitehead is like really good at that. It's like, where does it hurt? When does it hurt? How does it hurt? Let's try this. And he, like a lot of the exercises, he'll go straight at the part that hurts. to try to, because again, motion is lotion. If you, you know, kind of meet the, you know, the sore knee or the sore Achilles halfway, it more often than not falls in line.
Tell us a little more about the strength training combined with the endurance training, and maybe, you know, not if you're a runner, then what other endurance training maybe you also do?
Exactly. Yep.
You know, you're still working the cardiovascular system, but you're spreading the load on other joints.
Yes. You know, one of the other, I think, you know, one of the bits of good news for older athletes is, you know, we talk about sort of like, you know, containing and minimizing the disadvantages of getting older, but I think there are actually advantages of getting older as an athlete. Yeah. Well, one of them is, you know, this is true for, in my experience and in that of a lot of athletes I coach, and even actually some very well-known, you know, champion endurance athletes is that, you know, they say youth is wasted on the young. Cause like, you know, when you're young and your body is just as like made of rubber and everything's going your way and nothing goes wrong, you can be complacent. Like you can coast, like and so there's slack in your diet. There's slack in your strength and mobility training. There's slack in your recovery habits. And so when you get older and you can't get away with as much anymore, you can tighten up that slack and actually really extend your performance prime. I'm thinking of, you know, Meb Keflezighi, who he won the Boston Marathon, you know, days before he turned 39. He was the oldest winner of the Boston Marathon in decades and one of the oldest ever. And he spoke to this. He said, you know, when like my diet was crap, you know, when I was, you know, 28, because by all appearances, I could just get away with it. And then, you know, fast forward 10 years and it was just like, oh, wow. You know, the fat I eat is now the fat I carry. And so, you know, like he could have benefited from cleaning up his diet when he was 28, but he didn't feel that he had the incentive. Right. And it's the same with strength training. Like for me now, I work harder in the gym than I ever did when I was younger because, you know, like I'm tightening up the slack. And for me, it's just a way of like, of turning back the clock just a little bit. I mean, I could have benefited from taking strength training more seriously, but that's water under the bridge at that point, and it's not too late to do it now and benefit from it.
I'm laughing, falling down laughing on the inside, but on the outside, I'm just chuckling because you're talking about me in the worst way. I mean, I used to go to Burger King because I thought that was healthy. I mean, I don't think I did things because I didn't think I needed to. I didn't know any better.
Okay, yeah.
Yep. You know, I mean, I thought because Burger King was was charbroiled, it was healthy. Can you believe it? You know, oh my God. You know, so the education or lack of motivation, yep. I don't know. It hurt us all. And yeah, compensation is, I think, a natural thing. I think most people, especially people listening here who are athletic and, you know, they appreciate their bodies and they want to make their bodies last and perform well as long as they can, they're doing what they can. And hopefully I've had plenty of experts on the show talking about the importance of both of cardiovascular and resistance training. Mm-hmm. And just recently, I haven't done a podcast on it yet, although I have one in the works. I just started doing like a boot camp type thing, you know, mm-hmm. It's sort of like a CrossFit kind of a thing, but it's outside and it's body weight and running and mm-hmm. sprinting and things like that. Man, I would have said I was in good shape, but I am getting my ass kicked every time I do that. So that just tells me I was totally out of shape in certain ways. So
yes,
everybody can do more. But so here's to piggy on the back of advantages that older athletes have.
Yep.
I've had people throw this in my face, so I'll go ahead and give them credit. And what they've said is, as you get older, you usually have more time. You know, your kids are gone. You know, you usually have more time. Mm-hmm. Maybe you're even retired. You've got a lot of time on your hands now. You can do all kinds of things that you didn't have time for before. And maybe you got some money put away. Now you can afford things that you couldn't afford, you know, when you were younger. So, yeah, so there are some advantages to being older. Yes, I completely agree.
Yep. I think another one is, and this is true for me, if not for anyone else, is, you know, I do think like everyone has their individual formula. Mostly like what works for all human athletes, but at the level of details, we all have our own optimal recipe. And for me, I feel like, you know, where I am now with all the experience and self-knowledge I have, like I'm closer, to having dialed in like my optimal formula. You know, in the beginning, I just did monkey see, monkey do, and it led to a lot of progress, but it was someone else's perfect formula that I was adopting, and it wasn't a perfect fit. And it took me, I was a little slow on the uptake, realizing, what I really need to do is like a little bit less of this and a little bit more of that. That just works better for me. Can't explain it. Maybe genetic testing could. So that's another way of like, you know, turning back the clock a little bit. It's just like your training is more like dialed in to you than it was when you were younger.
Okay, so that's good. So let me ask you some specifics. And maybe the answer is it depends. But if you're going to, hide behind that, then you got to at least tell me what you do. Okay, so we've talked about a good diet. What does that mean?
Yeah, number one is eating enough, honestly. Too many athletes just get too restrictive, counting every calorie or deciding like some macronutrient is a villain and expunging it from their diet. So just making sure that you are like well-fed, well-nourished. That's number one. And then number two would be having a well-rounded and inclusive diet. Balanced is the word everyone uses, but I'm a big believer in that. In my experience, most of the top performing endurance athletes I've encountered, we do this thing at Dream Run Camp every Thursday. We bring in a professional runner for like a live Q&A. And we always feed them dinner afterwards. And so I'll ask, when we're setting it up, like, do you have any dietary restrictions? And none of them ever do, ever.
That's great.
Yeah. Which is like not the American norm. Like, if I were inviting competitive recreational athletes over for dinner, like they would have all kinds of restrictions, but the pros don't. They're like, yeah, I eat everything because I need everything. So that's number two. And then number three is just like, avoiding too much processed foods. Char broiled is still processed.
Yes. Right. I got that. Okay. All right. So that's useful. So as a part of the diet, then one of the things that is kind of a controversy, at least on the internet, is protein. You got the people on one hand who are like, oh my God, protein is the best. It's the most important thing. You've got to have a lot of it. And, and they'll give lip service to the quality of it. You don't want to eat hamburgers all the time or fried chicken legs but they want you to have a lot of protein because it's satiating. So it's going to keep you from overeating because it's fueling your body's ability to rejuvenate itself and build the muscles that you've been trying to build. And on the other hand, you got the people who say, oh, well, protein restriction is what makes animal models live much, much longer.
Right. Yep.
And vegetarians, vegans tend to be on the low side of the protein, and they tend to be pretty healthy, and then there's some arm waving about the muscle loss as those people get older. But anyway, I think that there's some truth in both arguments, but how do you reconcile them for an older athlete?
Yes. My basic orientation toward all things performance is pragmatism, and I'm interested in science. I pay attention to science, but I think a lot of people go down reductionist rabbit holes when they start like just going down to the level of biochemistry. And again, if you look at the top performers and you ask them like, how many grams of protein do you eat in a day? They have no fucking idea.
What a great answer. How much protein? I don't know. I just eat them until I'm full.
So, there's that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Protein's good. But I think, if you back into macronutrients through like, food types and balance, you're going to end up in like a pretty safe place, Yeah.
Got it. So whole foods, be an omnivore, I think.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Yeah. And I guess for the people who are burning a lot of calories, then getting enough calories is the main thing. And
yep.
Although I can remember when I used to burn a ton of calories, it also sort of gave me a license to eat whatever the hell I wanted.
Yeah.
Because it wasn't going to be like love handles. But I think that was a mistake because that was an opportunity to get nutrients. Instead, what I would say is, well, I'm going to take some vitamins so I can eat the crap. I'm going to burn the calories and I'm even in the end. I don't know that I was.
Yeah, probably not.
Yeah. Well, so what do you think about supplements? Do you recommend any?
Supplements, like, speaking from my pragmatic perspective, I think it's case by case. Like, you know, you have people who are just like very like pro supplement and they're always like looking for the next, magic pill.
Yeah.
And then you have people who are like very anti supplement and think that, no one should ever take any. and for me, like, it's case by case, right? You know, there are a lot of supplements that are useless.
Most of them.
At least for me. But there are some that aren't. You know, it's a short list. So yeah, case by case. And it also depends, like, you know, who are you and what are you taking it for? Yeah, so I mean, my short list is stuff like, omega-3 fatty acids, vitamin D, iron. You know, I live at high altitude. I run a lot. You know, I have a huge demand on my iron stores. I know that. Yeah. I've flirted with iron deficiency anemia before.
It doesn't feel good.
Yeah. But you can also get iron toxicity if you supplement and you don't have to. So that's a great example of like, right. Who are you and what are you taking it for?
Right. What about creatine? That's sort of risen to the level of, hey, this is not just for sports.
Yep. Yes. I'm a fan. I take it, as a matter of fact. Yeah. I just feel that, I think I originally started taking it because I felt it would just I would get a little more benefit out of the strength work I was doing. And that would, filter back into my endurance pursuit, which is why, I wasn't trying to win bench pressing contests, but still I felt like, creatine was relevant for me. And then when I developed long COVID, I learned about research showing that there's evidence that creatine helps combat chronic fatigue related to long COVID. And so at the time I was off it because I was so sick, I couldn't exercise. I'm like, what's the point? I'll save the money. But then I went back on creatine actually for health, not for performance. And now I'm running again and I'm on it for both reasons.
Did you notice an effect for chronic fatigue?
It's really tough to say because it just wasn't a controlled experiment. I was doing a number of different things like at that time. I was improving, but I don't know how much credit to give to creatine specifically.
Okay. And when you say supplement omega-3s, do you mean fish oil?
Yep, fish oil. Yep.
Okay. And so the last thing that I had on my list was I'm interested in, you heard me talk about what I'm doing to try to become well-rounded and how I discovered that I was not well-rounded. Even though I was doing a variety of things, it wasn't enough. What do you advise for your running athletes so that they stay healthy physically beyond just running so that they can be as good a runner as they can and want to be?
Yeah, great question. Strength training is like the obvious one. A lot of endurance athletes they do not want to be in the gym. And so, they're going from zero or just, half-assed crunches in the morning to, really basic vanilla strength training stuff. But, if you're at that level of you're not just mailing it in, you're strength training, as you discover with your boot camp stuff, like there's a whole world out there beyond, reverse lunges. The workouts we do at Paragon Athletics with Ryan Whitehead are, you would think like it was a lunatic asylum if you walked in there and you looked at like the exercises people are doing. It's completely unconventional. There's, skateboards involved and, he'll take something like a treadmill and you think, well, that's for running. And he'll have you do something not running with a treadmill, like lying down and doing like hamstring pulls with a treadmill belt. Yeah, great. Just like nutty stuff. Awesome. But everything he has you do is what people always say when they go there for the first time is like I'm mentally exhausted. Like, my mind has to be so engaged because it's a lot of balance and coordination stuff. Like he'll have you like do two or three different things at the same time, like jumping, rotating with like a band stretched around your knees that you have to maintain tension on. And for him, like, it looks like a lunatic asylum, but you know, there's a method to his madness. He said, like, you're never too old to stop playing. And playing is really like motor learning, you know, like keeping yourself just like a little bit out of your comfort zone. What I often find with those exercises is like, when I first do it, I can't. I'm like, I can't do this. I'm sorry, Ryan. Like, I cannot do this exercise. And he's just like, keep trying. And by the end of the session, like, I've mastered it. And it's not because I got stronger at that exercise. It's because I learned, like, my neuromuscular system, like, figured it out. And that is so valuable, I think, for athletes of any age, but I think it's especially valuable for older athletes because we stop doing that stuff. You know, we just like, we go to the gym and we do stuff. We can just turn our brains off and just like do stuff like mindlessly. And there's, you know, which is, it's better than nothing, but I think, you know, there is a realm beyond that.
That makes perfectly good sense. Yep. I mean, the stuff that I've been reading about brain health, one of the keys is to keep stress. I think the word stress is a negative sounding word, but a eustress, a good yes. stress on yep. the brain is important for keeping some kind of a, you know, capacity in the brain. Yep. And so this challenge, this sort of learning a new skill, a new sport, yep. you know, whatever, that is that's like learning a language. It's like yep. learning, solving a math problem. That's a challenge to your brain that maybe doesn't just extend your physical capabilities. Maybe it's extending your brain capabilities.
Yeah. Yeah. Very much so.
Okay. So I actually thought of one more thing that I wanted to get your thoughts on before we started to wrap up. One of the things that I always did sort of wrongheadedly in the past, and partially it was because I was a business professional, not a athletic professional. And so, you know, my athletics just sort of fit into whatever I could do. And I was sort of at a steady state. I always just try to get better over time. And I tried to stay as good as I could be all the time.
Yep.
And that, you know, because I wasn't at that elite level, that I could actually do it. But as I've gotten older, I now am finding that the advice that I always ignored in the past of, you know, having like a base building season, and then, you know, you would build to, you know, most important events, whether that's like over a year. And what I am doing now is I have kind of a 4-week cycle that I go through of where my workouts, they kind of follow the sequence of hard, harder, hardest, easy. Mm-hmm. And in my easy week is where I'll layer in some other things that I can't afford the stress of doing on my harder weeks, but it gives my body a chance to, it builds up and gets as strong as it can be. Yep. But if I keep going, it's just going to break. Yep. And so I got to let it off the hook and let it recover extra. Anyway, that's just what I have sort of figured out for myself. But do you have any thoughts around that kind of an idea?
I do. As a matter of fact, yeah, I call that macro pacing. And you find it, like, if you, getting back to Tommy Hughes, the Irishman who's breaking records in the marathon, you know, like I said, like he never completely let himself go, but he had fallow periods where he was just like, running was on the back burner. And, you know, he had family, he had, you know, he had a career, and the running was always there. And when he wanted to, or, you know, prioritize it again, he hadn't completely let himself go, but he was also fresh. You know what I mean? Because he wasn't trying to get after it 100% all the time. And you see that in all the people who are like really kicking butt, you know, in later years, is that they have that kind of like long-term balance where just because it's not their top priority now doesn't mean they're not going back to it. In fact, when they have every intention of going back to it, and when they do, like their mind, body, and spirit are going to be really ready to, you know, pour themselves into it and kick butt.
Awesome. Well, good. Was there anything else that you wanted to add in here? And then after that, why don't you tell us again how we can find you and your books and your camp?
Yeah, I think nothing else to add in this forum. But like I said, just getting started on this current project. So I expect to learn a lot. And so maybe when the book is out, I can send you a copy and we can talk again.
Oh, I'd love to do it. And yeah. I'll put the article that stimulated this yep. talk in the show notes.
And in terms of how to find me, my personal website, mattfitzgerald.org. I'm on Instagram. I don't remember what the handle is. And and you can also find me through dreamrun.com.
Awesome. All right, man. Matt, thank you very much. As always, you're a wealth of knowledge.
Always a pleasure, Joe.
All righty. Have a good one. Thank you so much for joining my conversation with Matt Fitzgerald. You can find more information about him and his camps in the show notes.